misunderstood. Baby, sometimes I'm so carefree. When a joy that's hard to hide. Outside, 'cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. If I seem edgy, I want you to know that I never meant to take it out on you. Life has its problems and I've got my share. That's one thing I never meant to do, 'cause I love you. Oh baby, don't you know I'm human? I have thoughts like any other man, and sometimes I feel myself alone, regretting some foolish thing I done. 'Cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Projectionist. You are listening here at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, Canada, and online at CITR.ca. My name is Michael Edelior, and this is a show where I review movies, share my commentaries about anything that involves filmmaking and cinema, report news on local and international cinema, and from time to time have in-depth interviews with filmmakers. I'm just a guy who loves movies and loves filmmaking. On this week's episode, I'll be reviewing The Hangover Part 3 and The Iceman. So before I go on to that, if you want to share your thoughts on the two movies being reviewed or answer any of my questions, give me a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Or if you want to be fancy, it's 604-UBC-CITR. Or you can email theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or you can send a Twitter, My Twitter handle is at Michael_Edilor. That's Edillor. And the show is not just me reviewing movies, but it's also to provide a platform for the community to share your thoughts and have some discussions. Think talk radio, but for movies. By the way, when I say community, I mean whoever is listening out there, because you can listen to this show live from all over the world through our website, citr.ca. So I guess it's a worldwide community, not just people who live in Vancouver. So, fair warning, if you call the station while I'm on air, you will be automatically be patched on air. So if you prefer to just share a comment, but you don't want to be on air, which happened on last week's episode, try calling during the PSA and show promos. And if I don't get to answer your call, please forgive me. Just be patient, give me a call back, and hopefully I can answer your call. So without further ado, let's do this. The Hangover, Part 3.
Whoa! Road trip!
Hello. How about that ride in? You guys might not know this, but I consider myself the one-man wolf pack. When Doug introduced me to you guys, I thought, wait a second, could it be? I just added two more guys to my wolf pack.
Oh, no! Help! Who was that guy?
You're so mean!
Don't you remember anything?
No.
Ow. It's funny because he's fat.
Four of us wolves. Looking for strippers and cocaine.
No more bumps, Chow.
I lost a tooth. I married a whore.
How dare you? She's a nice lady. Oh.
Classic stew. I can't even tell you what we've been through.
Oh! It's funny in any language.
Because we made a pact. More important than blood.
What the fuck is going on?
What I can tell you is this.
Oh, jeez!
Damn, he's still got it.
Hey, Phil, look. He's jacking his little weenus.
I must resign from the Wolfpack.
I'll always remember the last words he said to me. I'm proud of you, Alan. Never change. Well, I heard you loud and clear, Daddy. I will never change.
Never, ever.
You got the wrong guys!
No, I got the right fucking guys.
Hey, that's Black Doug!
Shut the fuck up with that.
Why is Black Doug kidnapping us?
I said don't call me that shit.
Just Doug,
yeah.
Okay?
It ain't Alan's fault.
Thank you, Black Doug.
Oh, motherfucker! Motherfucker!
So what are you doing down here?
You know, fucking, doing blow. Ooh, I got into cockfighting.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Oh, stay still, I'm trying to help!
What the fuck is wrong with those chickens?
They're angry. All I feed them is cocaine and chicken.
I told myself I would never come back.
Don't worry. It all ends tonight.
Suck it, bitches.
Oh, shit.
Should have thought this through.
Child!
I can't feel my nuts. Would you rub them and make sure they're okay?
You introduced a virus into my life. Mr. Leslie Chow.
God, what does he do?
He fucked me in the ass.
Oh, he does that from time to time.
Not literally.
Okay, that was the trailer for The Hangover Part 3. Directed by Todd Phillips, written by Todd Phillips and Craig Mazin. It is supposedly the epic conclusion to a trilogy of bad decisions. I love the first Hangover. In fact, I think it is one of the best rated R comedies of the last decade. I saw it 7 times in the theater. I don't know what made the first Hangover movie great, but is it the movie's energy? I don't know. Is it the irreverence of the tone? The execution of a concept that's never been seen or thought of before in an adult comedy, where you take a film noir missing person mystery and put it under the archetypes of a bromance type of comedy. Was it the chemistry of the unknown actors? Or maybe the male fantasy of just going on a night out with your friends and the epicness of mischief and partying to the limit and beyond and surviving all of it. And maybe all those things coming together to create lightning in a bottle. You know? Sorry. But for whatever reasons that made The Hangover 1 awesome, the filmmakers could not replicate it on the sequels. It's probably why The Hangover Part 2 is the first time ever a sequel story and structure is a carbon copy of the first movie, because the filmmakers thought by copying the exact same story on Part 1 and just changing the location, maybe they could replicate the magic. But it did not turn out that way. You know, how can you surprise someone when they already know what's coming up, right? So it's like getting the exact same gift you got from last Christmas. Picture that, but only in a different color and has a different gift wrap. As much as you like your first gift, when you see that it's the exact same gift, I mean, like, when you see the exact same gift this time around that you got last year, I bet the feeling is not as awesome as the first time around, you know? Am I right? So, when I saw Hangover 2, I thought Todd Phillips was doing an experiment, you know, in storytelling and filmmaking. The same way Gus Van Sant did when he remade Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Basically, Gus Van Sant took the original Psycho and filmed it shot per shot. So the only difference between the old version of Psycho and the new version is that one is in black and white and the other is in color. It took a lot of balls for a filmmaker to make that kind of experiment in storytelling. And I figured Todd Phillips might have thought the same thing, you know, wherein he thought it would be clever to take the exact same script of Hangover 1 and just change the settings and voila, you have Hangover Part 2. I hate to say it, but I did not find Hangover 2 funny. I laughed on a few parts, but for the most part, the laughs are too few and too far in between. So, you'll be wondering, why am I telling you about Hangover 2? Well, I think it's best to have some context on the story's progression when you go into, like, watching The Hangover Part 3. From the looks of it, Todd Phillips and Craig Mazin, the other writer, the writers of Hangover Part 2, who are also the same writers for Hangover Part 3, realized their experiment did not work. You know, they realized that if they do the exact same story and structure as Hangover 1 on Hangover Part 3, it probably would be a huge flop. Or either that, or just people would want their money back. That saying, you know the saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, you know? So that saying comes to mind, right? So for this time around, the director and the writers decided to take the stories and structure in a straightforward manner. You know, and it took a lot of risk too, to do it that way. They put the focus on Alan, played by Zach Galifianakis. I can't spell his name, sorry. But, played by Zach G. Let's just say Zach G. And his so they put the focus on Alan and his progress, if you can actually call it a progress, from man-child psychopath to high-functioning psychopath, if that makes sense. I say high-functioning psychopath because by the end of the movie, Alan has cut off his attachment to the wolf pack and is not living with his parents anymore. I think you heard that on the trailer a moment ago. So the movie is set probably around 6 months or so after the events of Hangover Part 2. Mr. Chow, played by Ken Jeong, has escaped from prison in Thailand. John Goodman plays Marshall. Now, you will see like a connection from Hangover 3 on Hangover 1. So Marshall is this gangster boss who has a beef with Mr. Chow because Mr. Chow stole something from him. But since Mr. Chow has escaped from prison and has gone underground, he forces the wolf pack to find Mr. Chow because he thinks Alan's friendship with Mr. Chow is the key. He kidnaps Doug to motivate the wolf pack, and if they can't find Mr. Chow, he kills Doug. So that's pretty much, you know, the gist of the story without revealing any like spoilers there. And instead of a mystery that propels the story forward, It's now a manhunt and a chase movie. Of course, to complicate things, Alan has stopped taking his medication for the last 6 months, and he's now turned from a lovable idiot to an asshole slash douchebag idiot. You know, you'll get it when you see the movie. Of course, they find Mr. Chow, but obviously things don't go as smooth as they hoped it would. So, there were some moments in the movie where I laughed, but it wasn't laughed out loud kind of laughter. Now, unfortunately, like the first two Hangovers, the best jokes were shown in the trailer. I mean, if you remember Hangover, I don't know why, but they really make awesome trailers for Hangover. Like, solid, like you want to watch the movie. But when you watch the movie, you see that, you know, you see the jokes that you always saw in the trailer, and it wasn't, you know, and it's not that impactful anymore. For example, the giraffe joke, right? You know, and you saw it in the trailer. If you saw it in the trailer, you'll see it in the movie. The movie starts with, Okay, I spoiled it. The movie starts with that joke. The giraffe, Alan driving around with buying a giraffe, you know, and I've seen the trailer for a few times now that when that joke came up, it's, you know, it wasn't as funny when the first time I saw it. I don't know if that made sense. But so the Hangover Part 3, so the is basically the Alan and Mr. Chow show. For this movie, I find Bradley Cooper, who plays Phil, and Ed Helms, who plays Stu, was mostly relegated to the background. They were just there to react to Alan or react to Mr. Chow. They didn't bring anything interesting or even make the scene funny. The problem I find with Hangover 3, other than the movie being not that funny, is the sudden shifts of tone in the story. We first think it's about Alan, with the death of his father and his mental issues, and how his family and friends force him to mature and seek help to be normal. Then, 20 minutes into the movie, it becomes the hunt for Mr. Chow. Once they find Mr. Chow, the focus is now solely on Mr. Chow and Phil. The focus is solely now on Mr. Chow, and Phil, Stu, and even Alan are then relegated to the background. And then the story takes a detour. It becomes a heist film. And then from it being a heist film, the focus then shifts to Alan and Mr. Chow's dysfunctional and destructive friendship and the realization of Alan that being friends with Mr. Chow is not good for him. I'm not asking for like Oscar level screenwriting for this kind of movie, the least that you would hope is it to be entertaining and hilarious, or at the very least, interesting. Oh, by the way, I think when The Hangover came out, the first one, I don't know if it got nominated for an Oscar for Best Screenplay, but it was really that good. I know it got nominated for a Golden Globe. I don't know if that counts anymore, because there's only like 70 people, members of the Golden Globe. Or maybe 40, I'm not sure. But anyway, that goes to show how awesome the first script was, the first Hangover was. Well, this time, I don't know, man. But I felt, the jokes were not that funny and the setups were not that interesting. And even the characters and the performances felt like I've seen it already. They were not doing anything new, and all the actors were just doing the same old shtick that you saw on the first two Hangover movies, especially Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms. Their reactions to the craziness that goes on around them stayed the same throughout all three movies. Here's the setup in all the Hangover movies. Okay, picture this. The Wolfpack goes into a situation to fix their problems. Craziness and chaos happens, either caused by Alan or Mr. Chow. We then see Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms react by saying how crazy or stupid the experience was, basically verbalizing what they just did. So it does become repetitious. The bright spot for this movie, I found, is Mr. Chow. Ken Jeong, man, he's operating on a different level than the rest of the cast. Whenever he's in the scene, he infuses it with this mad dog kind of energy. It makes it electric, man. It's like you seriously don't know what Mr. Chow will do, and it makes the scene interesting. Unfortunately, the director and the writers used Mr. Chow as a one-note joke and repeatedly, you know, used the same move again and again. You know, it's like, oh, Mr. Chow, just do your thing, be crazy, you know, Ken Jeong, you know, you're the man. And then they kept doing that, the same move again and again, you know. Mr. Chow crazy, you know. I think that's the term now. Crazy Chow, you know. They keep doing the crazy Chow. And it's like when they keep doing the same thing again and again and again, and by the fifth time, you've seen their move, it's not as impressive or interesting anymore. And you get sick of seeing it, you know. And that's what happens with Mr. Chow's character, you know. And I blame the director and the writers for that, you know. And I think that's what happens with the Hangover trilogy. The first time you saw Hangover 1, it was so new and fresh that you can't get enough of it. But for the sequels, the filmmakers didn't do anything new. What was fresh before has now become the formula. And at the worst, it has become a cliche. It's like when you hear a joke for the first time, you laughed out loud. But when you hear the same joke multiple times, there will be a time when it stops becoming funny. Whenever I watch a movie that is not so good, I always wondered, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, if, you know, how, what can be done to improve the movie or the story, you know. So we're like being like, say, armchair director here, you know. So for me, Hangover Part 2 would have been interesting if they showed the night of the partying and craziness instead of figuring out what happened to the night before type of story, you know, like instead of doing the Hangover 1 into Hangover 2, they just like, let's just show the party, you know. I think that would be interesting. You know, there was a scene in that movie where Alan had a momentary flashback on what happened that night in Bangkok, and I found that scene more interesting, and I wanted to know more, you know, about it than the rest of the movie. I think it would have been interesting to see how the Wolfpack and Mr. Chow acted while being high on whatever substance they took that night, you know? And for Hangover Part 3, there was a scene where Alan tells Marshall, you should have taken Stu instead. And I wondered what the movie would have been like if Stu was the one kidnapped, or even Phil was the one kidnapped, and we have Doug helping to look for Mr. Chow. Once they find Mr. Chow, maybe we get to know what makes Mr. Chow tick. For the most part, the only explanation that's given to the audience as to why Mr. Chow does the things he did in Hangover 3 is because he's just crazy. Heck, why not do Pulp Fiction style? You know, like where we go from following the wolf pack, finding Mr. Chow, and then Mr. Chow gets away from the wolf pack, and then we leave the wolf pack and follow Mr. Chow. And maybe we can also have a segment to see who Marshall is. It might be more interesting than watching Ed Helms just bitch about the situation, or Bradley Cooper's only reaction to even to every crazy thing that happens to them is to say fuck or what the fuck or another various terms of the word, you know? So Jeremy Johns, you guys should check him out. He's a movie reviewer on YouTube. Summarized the entire Hangover trilogy very well. And I'm going to take what he said here, because I think it was very succinct in describing this movie. He said, the Hangover trilogy is like the Matrix trilogy. You got the first movie, which is an awesome movie, and can be a single standalone movie, which would have been great, you know. But because the movie made a ton of money, the studio wanted sequels, and unfortunately, it never reached the same level of awesomeness as the first movie. There's a bonus scene in the end credits. Thankfully, you don't have to stay until the very end credits to see it. It would probably show up 30 seconds or maybe 1 minute in the closing credits. It's actually the only time I laughed out loud in the entire movie. I seen like I was stomping my feet laughing at how funny that scene was. You know? So I don't know if that says a lot about the movie. So there you go. Normally my reviews is just I just tell you how you feel, and that's pretty much it. I don't give like thumbs up or thumbs down or any like three stars or something. You know, it's just it's up to you. You know, it's like, here's my what I think about the movie, and it's on the table, and it's pretty much it. Have you seen The Hangover Part 3? You know, what do you think of it? What changes would you have done to make The Hangover sequels better? If you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, give me a call. 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. Or email me if you're, you know, the projection, or you can email me theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com or Twitter. My handle is @Michael_Edelior, and you spell the last name is Edillor. So that's pretty much it, man. Yeah, if you want to talk to the Knights Young, all night owls out there, if you saw The Hangover. And by the way, this, it's just for the community if you want, and talk about it. But before we go into that, you know, if you go, here's a few PSAs and show promos courtesy of CIDR.
Do you like noise, experimental, compositional, math, punk, post-punk, power pop, electronic, anything loud, quiet, local, or odd? White Light happens at the Astoria every Wednesday and features a wide spectrum of genre-defying music. Come by this month and check out Blind Horses, Polar Horse, Zen Mystery Fog, Pan, Citizen, Spiral Jetty, Defectors, Vapid, The Bad Machine, Eternal Summers, Future Tits, Blue and White Vans, Mine, Total Ice, and more. For more information, go to facebook.com/whitelights. That's facebook.com/WITELITES.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow.
Movies are a great way to understand the culture and thought process of a generation. And the 7th Annual Taiwanese Film Festival is taking place at the Downtown Vancouver International Film Center from June 14th to 16th. It will be featuring some of the best Chinese films from the small island of Taiwan. Come and experience the different world and get to know more about the many groups of people living in this awesome city. For more details, please visit twff.ca. Again, that is twff.ca.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Yes. We're being broadcasted live here on the campus of the University of British Columbia. So, anyone out there listening, this is also broadcasted live on air on our website, CITR.ca. So, anyway, I guess no one called. That's all right. That's cool. So I guess we will be heading to our next segment, which is the review for The Iceman. So without further ado, here is The Iceman.
Follow orders. You got everything to gain.
I'm thankful for my wife, Deborah. She means the world to me.
the way you take care of me.
I'm good at what I do.
No, no, no! Get police out!
What about leaving witnesses at a murder scene?
So, is it my lucky day or my last?
You got a second?
Trying to be my partner.
You take care of the details, I do the hits.
They're looking for the Iceman. How to charge your royalties for headlines like that.
You're doing hits behind my back? Poor sons of bitches thinking their dad's a decent guy.
See you at your school!
I'm gonna bury your whole family.
What's going on, Richie?
Nothing else to be afraid of.
I didn't know I was supposed to be afraid.
What are you praying? Think God will come down and save you?
Dad!
Tell him to come down and stop me.
Okay, that was the Iceman. Well, it's Iceman, okay? Not the Top Gun Iceman. No, that was the Iceman, directed by Ariel Roman, written by Morgan Land and Ariel Roman. So, the movie is a biopic based on the true story of convicted hitman Richard Kuklinski, who was arrested in 1986... and later claimed to have carried out 100 hits for the mob over a 20-year span. So we see from the how he started as a hitman on all the way to his arrest in 1986. So that's what the movie's span is. The interesting thing about Kuklinski's life is that he is a devoted and loving husband and father, and treats his job of being a hitman and later as a freelance contract killer as a day job to help support his family. You know, like, it's no different than, say, an accountant or a carpenter going on a 9-to-5 job, you know. So throughout the movie, we see this double life that Kuklinski lives, like Superman and Clark Kent or Batman and Bruce Wayne. You never know that the person you're having dinner with is a cold-blooded killer. So I think that's what the filmmakers wanted to show, and probably what appealed them to telling his life, the supposed duality of Richard Kuklinski. So as I was watching it, I was blown away by the powerful acting of Michael Shannon. If I only take one thing out of watching The Iceman, is that Michael Shannon's performance made me excited to watch Man of Steel. And to those who don't know, Michael Shannon will be playing General Zod in the movie, you know? So let's hear some clip of Match.
I will find him!
Yep, that's Michael Shannon. Let's hear that again.
I will find him!
I will find him!
Wow. Well, anyway, imagine that. Like, you're watching Kuklinski do his thing and everything. So Michael Shannon is basically purely mesmerizing in how he embodies a human king cobra. Ruthless, cold, deadly, you know. When you look at his eyes, you know, you see this beast, you know, inside him. And the only way for him to live a normal life is to find an outlet to let the beast inside him run free, you know. I'm getting philosophical here, but I think that's what I got out of watching the movie. You know, what from his performance. So it reminded me of the movie Stoker, directed by Park Chan-wook. And I don't know if you saw Stoker. It's really awesome. It's one of my favorite films of the year. In the movie, everyone in the Stoker family is crazy. Or, you know, it's like a bit off-kilter. So, or has this beast inside them. And the father of the family, Richard Stoker, knows this, and he knows his daughter probably has the same beast coiling inside her. So in order for his daughter to control the beast, yeah, he takes her regularly out to hunt wild animals. Now, the daughter doesn't know that there's actually, you know, this beast inside her. It's just, you know, but, she just thinks it's just bonding. But, you know, the father is doing it to help, you know, help, I guess, keep the beast in check. There's a line here that I think also applies to the Iceman in terms of Kuklinski's life. So in the movie Stoker, the father says to her daughter, "Sometimes you need to do something bad to stop you from doing something worse." You know, and that line, you know, really hit me. So it's not that I'm actually doing bad things, you know, to prevent me doing worse. No, it's just, I think there is this thing inside us, you know, like there's a beast inside us. Like if in Game of Thrones, I guess they're saying, like, there's a beast inside us, and it, you know, and it stirs when we put a sword in a man's hand or something. But yeah, so in Richard Kuklinski's case, he took that beast inside him and made it work for him. It's like in that TV show Dexter, where he's a cold-blooded psychopath, but he manages on the surface to live a normal life by having an outlet to release the killer inside him. So Michael Shannon's tall frame, you know, and the way he moves and his glance, how he bites his mouth and swallows his anger, stopping himself from slicing the throats of those that piss him off. Man, and sometimes he fails to keep the beast inside and just snaps and boom, you're dead. You know, I mean, that's the performance of Michael Shannon. And that's one of the few things that I liked about the movie. The other thing I liked about the movie is the supporting cast, especially seeing actors you would not picture in those kinds of roles. That was, you know, there was Chris Evans playing Mr. Freezy. If you heard that on the trailer, he's like, he says to the Iceman, he's like, "I wanted to talk to you," you know, and it's like, "Is it my last day or something?" And to those who don't know, Chris Evans is best known for playing Captain America and Human Torch. Very lighthearted and simple roles to play. And in this one, in this movie, he plays Mr. Freezy, which was Richard Kuklinski's rival hitman, and later on became a partner in crime. And basically, he's been known to call as Mr. Freezy because he drives around in an ice cream truck. So, and then, of course, he takes his hits and sometimes he takes the bodies of his hits and puts them on the freezer of his truck. So that's why he's called Mr. Freezy. But later on, I think all the credit went to Richard Kuklinski, where he became the Iceman. But it was actually Mr. Freezy's idea of freezing the bodies, and so that the cops or the forensics would not know when the exact time of death happened. So that was the reason that they freeze it and like they chop it up and stuff. And so yeah, that's basically that's why Richard Kuklinski got the nickname the Iceman, because basically he freezes everybody. But actually, it's just him and Mr. Freezy who did that kind of MO when they kill someone. So, and then there's David Schwimmer. So everyone, I don't know if you guys remember, David Schwimmer is like Russ from Friends. So you saw this like geeky guy, you know, bumbling guy. So, and he's in this movie playing this sleazy Fredo Corleone type of mobster, you know. And he has this like, you know, mustache and this long hair. And man, he's just like, he wants to be liked and he wants to be a big shot, you know. So, and yeah, it's like I enjoyed the performance. I enjoyed those kinds of things, you know. Like you see someone, you think you peg them for a certain role, but then you see them in something new, and you're surprised. So I found that pretty cool. So upon saying that, though, it's too bad that Ray Liotta playing a mobster boss did not bring anything new to his character. other than the typical tough and ruthless mobster that has been a cliche for that kind of role. I think it's been typecast to play a mobster from now until eternity, I guess, you know, and I think that's the problem with the movie. You know, you all have these great actors doing awesome work, but story-wise, the movie did not go anywhere. Yes, it's established that Richard Kuklinski is this loving family man by day and mob hitman by night, but the movie's timeline spans multiple decades, and from my perspective, the movie did not explore what makes Kuklinski tick. For him, you know, he looks at his job as a means to an end, to serve his family's needs. But early on, before he became a hitman, we already see this ruthlessness and coldness inside him, and how he has no qualms taking a life in a heartbeat. I don't think merely alluding to that he is a psychopath, because growing up he had an abusive father and did messed up stuff, is enough to provide insight to the man. Even if you are killing people in order to support your family, the same way butchers kill livestock because it's their job, there has to be more to it as to why Kuklinski is emotionless when taking a life. As in, the guy is like ice cold, man. He'll look at you and just go, boom. You know, he'll kill you, and then, as if like killing an ant or something, you think nothing of it, or killing a mosquito, you know, or a fly. You just, nothing. And that's how cold he is, man. And as much as it was awesome watching Michael Shannon's performance, you start wondering, what's the point of the entire movie, you know? There's a saying, happiness is getting to do what you like and get paid doing it. So, you see in the movie that Kuklinski and even Mr. Freezy like what they do, and they're good at their job. But where is the story going? Yeah. No matter how much the filmmakers justify to the audience Kuklinski's actions, it doesn't change the fact that the guy is an ice-cold killer. It's hard to empathize on what Kuklinski does for a living. If the filmmakers were attracted to in the duality of Kuklinski's life, the killer and the family man, I don't think the theme was enough to sustain interest for the entire movie. The problem is, at the end of the movie, Kuklinski's in the prison, all old and gray-bearded, and he's asked if he regretted what he had done, and he coldly answers, no. And that's how the movie ends, with no answers and no satisfactory insight into the man infamously known as the Iceman. The filmmakers oversimplified their treatment. You know, they treated the Iceman as a mere psychopath who does what he does for the love of his family. The filmmakers didn't really dig deep on who is the Iceman. You know, for me, biopics are not just recounting the events that happened in that person's life, but also it should provide insight into the mind of the person. A character study, if you will, you know? It's like, but the filmmakers merely settled in merely recounting Richard Kuklinski's life without really delving deep into his mind and his profession as a hitman. You know, there was a moment there where Richard Kuklinski and Mr. Freezy are like, you know, cutting up body parts. And they were like so nonchalant about it, about, you know, like the way, I guess, you know, butchers do it, you know. They're just nothing, you know. And you can see Kuklinski has this, you know, at ease with Mr. Freezy, because he can be, for, you know, open to him. You know, he's the only person he could talk to openly, rather than the rest of his like family and his like friends. Because he could just be himself. And I would have loved to have that explored more. You know, it's like, remind me, you know, if you, I guess I'm going back to Pulp Fiction again. So remember that scene, Pulp Fiction, where you just see John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson just talking. So if like, you know, and you would not think that those guys are hitmen or, you know, goons for the mob or something. They were just, and I would have loved if they would have had that kind of element in the Iceman, just to see, because I think I got what the tone were, like the director was trying to show in those scenes, that there's this like, it's almost like absurdity, you know, of this like workman-like approach and nonchalance of what they're doing. You know, they're killing people, and they're, you know, for them it's just a job, you know, they like what they do, you know, it's like baseball players or something, you know. And it's like, I would find that funny, I guess, if he, the director, you know, would explore that more, and I think it would lead to some dark humor or something, I don't know, or maybe insight. So it's unfortunate, because the acting of Michael Shannon and some of the supporting cast was intensely awesome, and for the most part their performance carried the movie and for me made it interesting. So have you seen The Iceman? You know, what do you think of it? How did you feel after you watched the movie? So if you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, to the Night Owls in Vancouver, or I guess to the Insomniacs in back east, or I guess Morning People on the opposite side of the world. We're a worldwide community here. It's not just Vancouver. So if you want to share your thoughts to the listeners, give me a call, 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. Or you could just email me, projectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or by Twitter, if you're into that. So at Michael Idilior, twitter.com. So, well, actually, Michael_Idilior. So that's pretty much, that was pretty much it. And but before we go into that, we will go into some quick advertisements. So that's pretty much it. Okay. Our computer's weird right now. So let me access something. And we'll be back in a jiffy. Okay, here you go. We're back. Advertisement time.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
ABC Short Filmmakers, this 4th annual Vancouver Short Film Festival is now accepting entries until August 1st, so get those cameras rolling. Student recent grads and professional filmmakers can submit films and videos, and remember, the shorter the better. Last year 29 short films were screened, and over $15,000 in prize we were awarded to busy filmmakers. For entering rules and submit online, please visit the Vancouver Short Film Festival at vsff.com.
FM Vancouver Reloaded, playing your favorite tunes and mouth-humping your ear holes full of voice talk. Yeah, we do that.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
to the media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective. News 101 is Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, bringing you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective. Tune in Mondays and Fridays at 5 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Live streaming and podcasts are available online at citr.ca.
Okay, we are back. So, I guess everybody's sleeping right now. That's cool. You gotta sleep. But anyway, if you guys are interested, just give me a call here. 604-822-2487. So if you have any thoughts on any of the movies that we talked about today, just give me a call, man. That's pretty much... And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you could find out what's going on. That's pretty much... okay, so we are going into another segment here. It's basically the news. Well, I think I have 30 minutes. So anyway, I read this online from Vancouver Sun. And they reported that the Center for Performing Arts has been bought by the Westside Church. So, and the Westside Church is basically an evangelical religious group. You know, so, and according to the Vancouver Sun report, the directors of the Vancouver International Film Festival, the Go Ballet, and Unique Lives Lecture Series has been told by the center's current management that the venue will not be available for them after the Westside Church takes over ownership in August. So, that's what I read. This is on from the Vancouver Sun. And I think this was like a few weeks ago. So I'm a bit late, but... But I would like to share this on this show. So, that means the three groups mentioned have to find a replacement venue for their events. The Vancouver International Film Festival, or let's just say VIFF for short, you know, just VIFF, has already lost Granville 7 Cinemas as a venue to screen their movies. So that's, to those who don't know, the Granville 7 Cinemas is like it's a 7-screen movie theater. So that's gone. And basically, that theater was, for the last 10 years, was the linchpin of the Vancouver VIFF. So now there's this uncertainty, what's going to happen, you know? So they were hoping the Center for Performing Arts would at least fill the void of that, I guess, theater, you know, for another venue for the film festival to show their movies. So this movie, that the Center is basically an 1,800-seat theater. So someone who has regularly attended the VIFF and have been a hardcore film festival watcher, it helped a lot that most of the movies you want to watch is in one location, and all you need to do is just hop from one cinema to the next. That's what made VIFF such a success for the last 12 years. But with that gone, for this year's film festival, it has brought uncertainty and worry among the regular film festival goers. So, one of the worries is that film festival goers will have to travel a lot between the theaters in order to watch the movies they like. And it would definitely limit the number of movies they can watch in a day. So, and speaking from experience, there are film festival goers that are so hardcore at watching movies that they watch 4 or even 5 movies a day for 16 days straight. So imagine that, 10 a.m. or 12, all the way to 10 or 12 midnight. Yeah, hardcore, man. So they basically turned the 16-day film festival into those extreme adventure races, you know, like Eco Challenge or something. So that's how extreme it is. So according to the Georgia Strait report, according to a report from the Georgia Strait magazine, VIFF has secured new venues for this year's film festival. So VIFF will incorporate the cinema at SFU Woodwards, the Vancouver Playhouse, and the Rio Theater into their roster of theaters, which also includes the Vancini Theater, Pacific Cinematheque, and the Vogue Theater. But now that the center is gone, you know, that's one more thing gone from their list. So basically, but right now VIFF is still waiting word from Cineplex Odeon for the use of their cinema on Tinseltown, or I guess now it's called Cineplex Odeon International Village Cinemas. God, that's a long, a mouthful there. So, or the Fifth Avenue Cinemas. Those two cinemas that I mentioned are multiplexes. One is like 12 screens and the other one's like 5 screens. So they're hoping, VIFF is hoping that they could get a multi-screen theater, and that'll help in like at least having a place where people can just stay there and not leave and just watch movies, you know. So to those who don't know, the cinemas VIFF has secured, the ones that I mentioned, other, you know, are single screen theaters. So it's not yet doom and gloom for VIFF, but if they don't get to secure a multiplex to replace Granville 7, it would definitely change the dynamic of the film festival. According to Alan Franny, festival director of VIFF, to compensate for the shortage of venues during the film festival, there will be more screenings added for the VIFF repeats. So this is basically the VIFF repeats are any like popular movies that from the film festival, and they will like keep it and they will show it again later on. And this is held on the third weekend of October, just after the film festival. Alan Franny said it will be held at the Vancity Theater and the Rio Theater. So now, one of the problems I have for those VIFF repeats is that if you bought a film festival pass, you know, those passes that allow you to watch as many movies as you can during the film festival, you can't use that pass for the VIFF repeats. And as someone who has bought a festival pass before, those passes are expensive. And you need to watch a lot of movies just to break even. And for me, it's not like I'm loaded here. So I basically try to get my money's worth. And speaking from experience, not all movies shown at the film festival are worth $12 or $14 or whatever, you know, they charge. I mean, this is just nothing against like artistic filmmakers and all that, but there are a few movies that I've seen that I'm like, okay, I'm not paying for that, you know. And if you have a pass, you feel like, oh man, I need to watch twice as more to compensate for the movies that you watched that sucked, you know. It would definitely be an interesting year for the Vancouver International Film Festival and the cinephiles of Metro Vancouver and beyond. And I say beyond because we have, I've met people from Seattle, from Victoria Island, who come over here in Vancouver just for the film festival. And they stay here for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks and just watch movies. And so let's see what happens. It'd definitely be an interesting year. So what do you think of the news that VIFF won't be able to use the Center for the Performing Arts? What's your forecast for this year's film festival? If you want to share your thoughts or to our listeners out there, give me a call. 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. 2487 or by email projectionist.citr@gmail.com or by Twitter. My handle is @Michael_Edelior. And that's my thing over there. So let's just quick do a quick advertising here. So here goes. Studio show promo. Here you go.
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What's this Pilate? He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sunya!
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue, right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
What do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Okay, we are back here on CITR 101.9 FM. You are listening to The Projectionist. So, okay. We are we have 15 minutes away, so we still have a lot of time. Guys, just give me a call or something. Just talk, whatever. It's the night is young or something. But anyway, here are news and screenings happening in Vancouver for the upcoming week. So for the next week, the new commercial movie coming out this Friday will be After Earth. It's the Will Smith and Jaden Smith adventure sci-fi survival movie directed by M. Night Shyamalan. So, I don't know if you saw the trailer, but when I hear M. Night Shyamalan attached to a movie, I'm like, okay. But, I don't know. I might check this out because this is the first time ever M. Night Shyamalan did not write the script. You know, I used to like M. Night Shyamalan, but... After, you know, I thought Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, even Signs, and even Lady in the Water, and also The Village, they were okay, you know. But I haven't seen The Happening. But when I saw what he did on Avatar, The Last Airbender, oh man, oh, just made me want to burn the screen. But anyway, so... I just that basically made me take M. Night Shyamalan from the list of directors that I will go out. I don't care what their movie is. I'm going to go out and watch it. I just basically took it out of that list. I'm like, oh man, why? So, After Earth, that's for a show, it will be showing this Friday. And then there is the Heist Magician movie, Now You See Me. So, I think that was Jesse Eisenberg, all-star cast. A lot of really good people. Jesse Eisenberg, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Do you know how you spell Michael Caine properly? It says, say Michael Caine. Yeah, that's how he says it. Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Anyway, so that's going to be also showing this Friday. Now You See Me, the Magician Heist movie. So I bet there will be new movies showing this Friday, but those two movies will be definitely are the ones showing this Friday. As for movies showing in Vancouver's art house cinemas, showing at the Van City Theater, you can still catch Beyond the Hills from director Christian Mungui. He's the director of the acclaimed film 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, and the documentary Italy, Love It or Leave It. Love It or Leave It. So Italy, Love It or Leave It. So that you can still catch them for the last time this Thursday, May 30, at the Van City Theater. In terms of the new movies showing at the Van City Theater for next week, starting this Friday, are the animated film from Spain titled Wrinkles, or the Spanish title Arrugas. So it's directed by Ignacio Ferreras. It's about two elderly men at a care facility for the aged who became best friends. And it's based on Paco Roca's multiple award-winning graphic novel of the same name. Then a movie from South Korea. So then another movie that will be showing this Friday at the Van City Theater is a movie from South Korea titled Pieta, directed by Kim Ki-duk. So one of my Kim Ki-duk is one of my favorite filmmakers. Though to be fair, I only saw one of his films, which is Three Iron, which blew me away. So that's his film will have a week's screening at the Van City Theater, Pieta. So Pieta won the Golden Lion Award at last year's Venice Film Festival. It's the highest prize the Venice Film Festival gives to a film. I guess it's the Venice Film Festival's version of a Best Picture, you know. So apparently on the Van City Theater's program guide, it says, the movie is a challenging and tough film, violent and provocative, an intense drama, but if you've survived the first hour, the payoff tells us something unexpectedly poetic and moving about the relative value of money and compassion in today's capitalist society. Wow. I don't know if you're pumped up to watch that movie now, you know, just after hearing the description. Violent, tough, challenging, provocative, intense drama. But if you survive the first hour, the payoff would be awesome. So anyway, well, for me, I'm like, wow, makes me want to watch it now. The movie is about a brutal loan shark redeemed by the unqualified love of a woman claiming to be his long-lost mother. So that's Pieta. Yeah. So for next week at the Van City Theater, you'll have Wrinkles and Pieta. At the Pacific Cinematheque, or I guess now it's called the Cinematheque, they're having a mini retrospective of the films of screenwriter, producer Charles Brackett and writer-director Billy Wilder. Mind you, Billy Wilder is one of the greatest filmmakers in Hollywood, in cinema. You can still catch The Lost Weekend and Ball of Fire showing on Wednesday and Thursday at the Cinematheque. So it's this Wednesday and it's this Thursday. So you can still catch those two films, The Lost Weekend and Ball of Fire. I've seen those two films over the weekend, and man, Ball of Fire is pure comedy. I love that film, man. Other than Sunset Boulevard, you know, I love that film. The Lost Weekend, it was good, solid, but it was preachy a bit, you know. But the writing, man, the writing was poetic or something. It's like,
say Shakespeare or something, the way they just like the sound of the words and stuff. And anyway, it's like, so worth checking out. You never know. It's like you might, you go watch something and you realize, oh my God, it's an awesome film or something, right? So worth checking out the Cinematheque. And for next week, starting on Friday, this is also at the Cinematheque, going on to the weekend. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Cinematheque will be showing the Mexican film Aquí y Allá. Aquí y Allá. So it's I'm sorry if I butchered that. The movie is directed by Antonio Mendez Esparza. It won a lot of awards in the film festival circuit. The movie is about a man returning to his village in Guerrero, Mexico, after years working in the U.S. illegally. So he finds his daughters older and more distant than he imagined. His wife still has the same smile, having saved some earnings from two trips to the U.S., he hopes to now finally make a better life with his family, and even to pursue his dreams on the side by starting a band. But life doesn't always go as planned, you know? So I saw this movie at last year's film festival. It was really slow. Some of the festival goers, they did not like the movie. Me personally, I like the movie. I like this that human element to it. But mind you, it's a really slow movie. Don't go in there tired. You gotta be like at least awake, or at least have drank 5 espressos or something. That's how slow it is. But for me anyway, I liked it. Just the drama and the simplicity. And the movie was apparently played by non-actors. So you can see that, and that's one of the movies showing this coming weekend at the Cinematheque, Aquí y Allá. And the other movie showing on the weekend is the documentary Fight Like Soldiers, Die Like Children. Fight Like Soldiers, Die Like Children. The movie is directed by Patrick Reed. So Patrick Reed follows former general Romeo Dallaire. Canadian general Romeo Dallaire. So to those who don't know, he's like, if you've seen the movie Shake Hands with the Devil, which was also like, I think, a documentary and then was turned into a feature film. So it's about General Romeo Dallaire was the one stationed in Rwanda during their, I guess, genocide, I think in the 90s. I forgot when the exact dates, but he was the UN peacekeeper general there, and he warned and he told the world, like, look, something's messed up, something's like going on here, something big. And then next thing you know, massacre started happening. I think one basically pure ethnic cleansing at that scale, like a genocide, or I don't know, I guess that's genocide. But yeah, basically one ethnic class is killing another ethnic class, and systematically. And the UN was told not to do anything. Just stay there and just protect yourselves, but don't do anything. Don't save those people. Don't do anything. And Romeo Dallaire just, was like following the orders, but he said, like, look, I can't stand by and watch people get massacred. So he disobeys the orders of the UN, and he goes on and just saves he tries to save and stop and try to put some order in Rwanda. And later on, and I think by the time the international community started to say, okay, Rwanda, stop what you're doing, it was already too late. I think there was already hundreds of thousands of people were already killed during that ethnic cleansing. But for his position of disobeying orders by, not just watching by, but instead stopping people from, saving people, Romeo Dallaire got relieved of his duties. So that's, but yeah, Romeo Dallaire is one of the Canadian heroes. And so anyway, this documentary, Fight Like Soldiers, Die Like Children, is where Romeo Dallaire travels to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, South Sudan, and North America as he talks with child soldiers, self-defense groups, militia leaders, and those trying to demobilize these children. As Dallaire visits the different countries searching for solutions to this horrific practice of child soldiers, graphic novel style animation interspersed throughout his tour adds the first person voice of a child soldier. And Ismael Beya recounts a chilling story that makes clear the critical importance of Dallaire's work. So those are the two movies showing on this coming weekend on the Cinematheque, Fight Like Soldiers, Die Like Children, and the Mexican film Aquí y Allá. And on Monday and Wednesday, the Cinematheque continues its mini retrospective of the collaborations between writer, producer Charles Brackett and writer-director Billy Wilder with the films The Major and The Minor. It is Billy Wilder's debut feature film. And double bill with that is Five Graves to Cairo. It is Billy Wilder's second film. So if you're a Billy Wilder fan, this one's for you. And they are all projected in glorious 35mm film, which nowadays is starting to get rarer and rarer. But yeah, so I mean, I think it's a very, very rare treat there. So that's on Monday and Wednesday. Next Monday and next Wednesday at the Cinematheque is Five Graves to Cairo and The Major and The Minor. So those two films. And finally, on next Thursday, June 6th, at the Cinematheque, again at the Cinematheque, part of the Powell Street Festival is the fifth edition of the Kibatsu Cinema, happening every Thursday in June. So every Thursday in June is Kibatsu Cinema. Kibatsu Cinema is a celebration of the odd and the eccentric in Japanese pop culture and contemporary Japanese film. Kibatsu is a Japanese word denoting a person or thing that is, by ordinary standards, unusual or unconventional. The movie showing next Thursday will be Casting Blooms to the Sky and The Dark Harbor. So for showtimes and more info about the films I mentioned, just go to the Van City Theater website, viff.org/theater. So that's for the Van City Theater, just go to their website. It's viff.org/theater. And for the Pacific Cinematheque's website, you can go to thecinematheque.ca. It's a bit tricky, but I think there's Google. Just Google Pacific Cinematheque. But if you really want to do it, you just check out to their website, thecinematheque.ca. So that's pretty much it for the art house scene. And if you have any cinema or filmmaking events you want me to mention on the show and let the word out, or if you want to share your thoughts, questions, opinions, suggestions of a movie you want me to review, you can send them by email, theprojectionist.citr @gmail.com, or you could send them at Twitter. It's twitter.com/Michael_Edilior. And that's, and I think that's pretty much it. And on the you could also follow me on Facebook. The link to it is on the Twitter account. So I think that's pretty much it. Let me just check, do something here. Hope you guys are doing well, and you know, and I hope you guys are enjoy the show or find it okay. I'm doing three things at the same time and our computer's sync. Weird here. That's pretty much it. Okay, man, guys. So, let me see. My Facebook page link is on my Twitter page profile. And also post a link to the podcast of this film. I post a link to the podcast of this show on my Facebook and Twitter pages. So you can just check that. And the next episode will be this Friday, May 31 at 7 a.m. Yeah, Pacific Standard Time. Yeah, it's a morning show. You know, it's a bit weird. I'm doing a night show and then now I'm doing a morning show. So hopefully by then I can, you know, have you up and running a review of After Earth. And maybe Now You See Me. Or and also like an early review of The Internship. So let's, maybe that those things might be the ones I'll be doing for this Friday. So yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Whoever's listening right now, I thank you for spending the time with me and listening to me ramble about movies. I wish you all a good week. And I hope you enjoy yourselves this time. And I hope you enjoy yourselves at the movies. Good night, guys. And you are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or online at citr.ca. So take care, you guys.
No money, no toast. I'm on a hungry dark road. Oh, mama, I'm broke. No money, no toots. I'm on a hungry dark road. And I'm a long gone daddy with the devil's load.
Right there.
And now the devil's load is lighting the fire. It's dragging me down, dog, to the wire. There's one thing that I could have known. Trying to get a ride with the devil's load. It's the devil's load, baby, bound by a chain. And never coming back this way again. I'm jumping the track and all my bags are stowed. Trying to get a ride with the devil's load. Oh, mama, I'm broke. No money, no toast. I'm on a hungry dark road. And I'm a long, long daddy with the devil's load.
What's that now?
Devil's load is hurting my head, and my legs are breaking on my dirty bed. Stalking a